Welcome to the first installment of the peer-to-peer series here on SlickThought.net, and we'll start off with an introduction to the peer name resolution protocol, which really forms the foundation for all the things that we'll be doing building peer-to-peer applications. So let's go ahead and dive in with a quick review. I'm sure most of us understand today already how the internet works, but let's just have a quick review so we can compare and contrast that to what we want to do with peer-to-peer networking. Typically, we're in a very kind of client-server sort of arrangement here, to use a broad brush, where I am sitting at my laptop. I want to connect to some service on the internet at someservice.com, so I will go and talk to a DNS server and say, hey, where does someservice.com physically reside from an IP perspective? The DNS will give me the actual address, and I will go and connect to that service. And this works great because I have a fixed name, I have a fixed IP address associated with that name, and I'm also reasonably sure that someservice.com will always be available. But in the peer-to-peer world, things are a lot different. I may be Bob sitting at my laptop, and I want to talk to Alice. So in some ways, this seems a little bit like the previous situation, where I want to connect to Alice and have Alice connect to me, and maybe I can accomplish that in ways very similar to what we saw with the DNS server. But what happens when all of a sudden I have many, many parties that I want to talk to, and any party may talk to any other party, and in addition, some of those people may be online, some of them may be offline. This is really the problem space that we're going to look at and try and solve and build different types of applications that use peer-to-peer technology. So based on what we just said, you may think to yourself, well, I can solve that problem using dynamic DNS. And if you're not familiar with that, what would basically happen is Bob is interested in talking to Alice. And so when Alice would come online, she'd be able to go out to the dynamic DNS server and register, hey, I'm Alice, and here's my IP address. And then Bob could go and see, hey, is Alice online, and or basically ask for Alice's IP address, not really if she's online, but ask for her IP address. And if she has one, then I can go and talk to her directly. This actually has a couple different problems. The first is that when I get lots of clients, dynamic DNS really isn't dynamic enough to support lots of clients. Here I'm showing only five, but imagine hundreds or thousands. And so what happens is they're all going to register. They can be coming online and offline. And we have this whole, how do I replicate and propagate those DNS addresses fast enough so that Bob has a relative good chance of knowing if someone's actually been registered and is online or is offline, and you know their IP address is no longer valid, etc. The other problem is that this doesn't solve the problem of these clients, Alice, for example, being behind a NAT device, for example. How do you register your IP address and have all of that work correctly across a NAT or some kind of firewall type of device? And PNRP will help us solve some of those problems, both from the dynamic nature of this world and also help us work with some things like NATs, for example. So at the end of the day, this is just not the solution we're looking for. So what you typically see happen for, let's take a chat application, is what will happen is when Bob wants to talk to Alice, what's going to happen is there's going to be some intermediary at chatservice.com. And what will happen is both the participants or any of the participants will go to a DNS server and say, hey, I want to have a chat. Where's my chat service reside? And then they'll go and connect up to that chat service and basically announce, hey, I'm online. And then Alice could do the same thing. I'm online now as well. And then they could communicate. And typically what happens is this is actually a relay through chat service. So they're not talking to each other directly. Now, there are ways around this. Some services provide the ability to eventually transition that connection to a direct connection between Bob and Alice, regardless of NATs and firewalls and things like that. And we'll talk about those scenarios much later in some of the future screencasts that I'm going to do. But fundamentally, just kind of think of the fact that we're always passing through this intermediary. And really, I'm still dependent on the same things that we had from the earlier discussion, which is I need to have a fixed name, like chatservice.com. I need to have a fixed IP address, relatively speaking, registered in the DNS. And then I have to have some level of assurance that chat service will always be available to me for me to talk to anyone, not just Alice, but anyone who I'd like to chat with. So lots of different things there. For large-scale applications where I have tons of infrastructure and I'm a Microsoft or a Yahoo or whoever, you know, running these intermediary services are fine and make sense. But for individual developers where we want to create compelling applications, again, this is just not a great solution to have. I don't want to have to build and maintain infrastructure. I want clients to be able to talk to each other directly across the internet. So let's take a look at this from a PNRP perspective. What does this provide? Well, what PNRP is think of it as a cloud, and it's an IP6-based technology. And what we're able to do is actually register into this cloud that I'm online. Now, if you're running IP4 or your provider only does IP4, if you have IP6 installed on your machine, we're actually able to tunnel the IP6 information through IP4 and kind of make this all work also. But this allows me to go and register in the cloud and say, hey, I'm online. And Alice can do the same thing. Now, what's really cool is it doesn't have to just be a person. This could be any application. It can represent an app, a person, my desktop itself, or my laptop itself into the cloud. It's really kind of up to you for what this registration actually means, but what you're doing is essentially associating a name with an IP endpoint. And so what Bob can do is go and ask the cloud, hey, is Alice online? And if she is, PNRP will return an IP address and a port and allow him to go and connect up to Alice and directly communicate with her, even if there's NATs in the way. Now, symmetrical NATs kind of break this, but those are a little harder to find nowadays, a little bit older technology. And the nice thing about PNRP is that it's very quick and responsive. So as Alice and Bob come and go offline, I don't have to worry about propagation, really. It happens very quickly, the state changes that happen in various nodes that are online. So the question is, what's this 0.Bob thing? Why are you using 0.Bob? Why couldn't you just say Bob? Why couldn't you just say Alice? Well, this is a unique naming convention that we refer to as a peer name, and it's actually made up of two distinct parts. The first part is the authority, and what the authority basically does is tells us whether this peer name is secure or not. Unsecure peer names always start with a zero, which means anybody could be 0.someapp anywhere in the cloud because it's unsecure. Then there's this classifier, which uniquely identifies a peer name within a particular authority. Now, as I said, this is an unsecure peer name. We also have secure peer names, and you can see they look much different. So here is my app. That could just as easily be some app. But then we've got this long string of characters in front. That's still the authority in the classifier. It's just that the authority in a secure peer name is based on a secure hash of the classifier, and that's unique to the laptop or the desktop or the server or whatever that peer name was created on. So if I create my app as a secure peer name on my laptop, and you create my app as a secure peer name on your laptop, the authority will actually be different because we use some keying technology to make sure that it's unique and specific to a particular machine. So very useful to help make sure that when I do connect to my app, I know that, okay, it's my app from this particular machine. And we'll look at different ways to use, you know, secure and unsecure peer names as we work our way through this series. Which then brings us this idea of clouds. I mentioned the PNRP cloud to begin with, but there's actually different types of clouds within PNRP. There's what's called a global cloud and a link cloud. And what can happen is a particular peer name can go and register into the global cloud, which basically represents the entire internet. So anyone who wants to find some app could find it from anywhere on the internet. And there's this also link local cloud, which is really kind of related to the direct subnet that your particular adapter is connected to. So if I had multiple adapters in my machine all connected to a network, so if I was sitting down, my wireless card was talking to one network, and I had a hard line connected to a different network, I'd actually have two distinct link local clouds. And I can register an application into that. I can also register an application into all the clouds. So when I create an app, it's available to anybody, either from an internet perspective or from a link local perspective. And that is just a way to kind of differentiate on how you want to register your names, where they exist, and who can find them. So why don't we do some demos and take a look at using PNRP at the command line so you can kind of see how this all works. Let's go ahead and explore the world of peer-to-peer using our command prompt. It is just a normal command prompt, and we're going to use the network services shell. So we're just going to start off by getting into the shell with netsh, and let's dive right in and go into peer-to-peer, PNRP, and go to the cloud context. And what we're going to do is show a list. This shows all of our available clouds. So the first cloud is the global cloud, and the second cloud is my link local cloud, which is basically the subnet represented by the wireless adapter in my laptop. The state is virtual for both of these clouds. That's a good thing. The PNRP infrastructure is kind of a lazy load environment, which means we don't fire everything up until you actually start to use it. So if we didn't see virtual here, it would probably mean we had some kind of error situation if we were looking at this for the first time without registration. So everything looks good here. You can get more detail by saying show names. We'll actually look at this after we've registered some peer names and see a lot more detail. But here we can see, you know, global virtual, my cloud operational mode, not started, auto config. These are my synchronization servers on the internet that I'll use for my global peer names, and also use those to grab, you know, nearby peers and cache those and look up peers and things like that. And so my link local, also not started. So let's switch over to the peer context, do a show registration, and as we would expect, we don't have any entries right now. So let's add a registration. We can only do unsecure names in the network shell, and by default, add registration will add a peer name to all of my available clouds. If I wanted to scope to a particular cloud, I could do something like that and say just register me in the global cloud, for example. But we'll go ahead and register 0.jeff. You can also register as many names as you would like. So I can put in 0.test as well and register that. And now if I show my registration, it will show me I have two different peer names registered on this machine. That's good. Let's switch back to the cloud context now. Show my list of clouds. And here, let's try that again. All right, we are a little slow in getting the global cloud set up. The alone would have been a bad thing. Here you can see that we've got the global cloud shown as active, which means, okay, we're in, we're registered. I've found nearby peers, life is good. The link local shows it as alone. And the reason why is I'm on my local subnet, so there's no server to register with. And unless there's other peers, you know, doing peer-to-peer on my local subnet, I'm pretty much alone. So that's okay to see on the link local. It would be a bad thing to see on the global. So let's do a show names for more info. And so you can see a lot more information now here available to us. So again, those are my synchronization servers. I'm a full participant. Here's the IP address and the port I'm working off of. You can see I have 22 cached entries, which represents basically there's things out there in the cloud that I can talk to. Here's my peer name. We'll talk about identities and comments and things like that later in subsequent screencasts. Here's 0.test with its associated information as well. And then here's my link local. I'm a full participant, but again, no synchronization servers, no cached entries. Again, if there was another peer just sitting on my same subnet here, I could actually have cached entries, but we don't have that here. So that really is kind of the key way to go about registering peer names using the NetSH environment, the network services shell. What we're going to do is open up another command window here real quickly. And what I want to do is now try and do some resolution, some resolve, some lookups against those peer names. With PNRP, you cannot resolve a peer name from the same process that you registered it, and that's why I have another command window. Now, you could, for theater of the mind, pretend that you've registered in the green window and left your laptop running at home, took a spare laptop and ran up to the library or the Starbucks and fired up this command prompt there, and assuming they haven't done anything with blocking ports or doing some weird network configurations, all of this would work just the same, even if I was on a different laptop. But what we'll do is dive into our network shell again, peer-to-peer, PNRP, and go into the peer context, and let's do a resolve 0.jeff. This normally takes a little bit, so I'll fill in the gap by telling you that in the next screencast, we will actually kind of be doing similar things, but using the PNRP API directly. And so obviously resolve takes a little while. Just so you know, the resolve method in the API does have an asynchronous implementation as well. So I can do an asynchronous resolve. So if I was building a client app, for example, I wouldn't want to block the thread that the GUI is running on. So it really is helpful that I can run this asynchronously. And now we've got a result. So it's found two endpoints associated with 0.jeff. One is the endpoint on the local link, or the link local cloud, so that's this one represented by the address 192. And then I've got one from the global internet as well, which is this IPv6 kind of address. So that's really kind of nice. But there's one other thing that I can do, which is really powerful. I can say show converted name for 0.jeff. And what this is going to show me is a DNS name that represents that endpoint that I can actually use, just like any DNS name from anywhere else on the internet with any of my applications, and go and connect to that peer, I'm using that DNS name. Now, there's no actual DNS server involved. This is PNRP kind of black magic going on that makes this work. So what I can do is I can actually go in and say ping jeff.pnrp.net. And you can see it's gone out and it's actually pinging on the internet that peer. So really cool. We'll do in the third screencast an example of where we use PNRP with WCF, and we actually connect two applications over the internet using Windows Communication Foundation and giving the WCF client application the DNS, quote-unquote DNS, the faux DNS. So we actually connect those computers using the DNS name that we find via PNRP. So very, very kind of cool stuff. What I'm going to do is go back up here and show you one more little thing that can be helpful from a troubleshooting perspective, just so you know. Again, not a deep dive into troubleshooting here in this particular screencast. But I'm going to switch over to the interface Teredo context here. And Teredo is the technology that we use to map the IP6 stuff and tunnel it through IP4. And I can ask it to show me its state. And this is kind of what we would like to see after we've fired up the PNRP environment. This is a list of information. If it's a short list, it usually will include an error entry and it will tell you why Teredo's not working. And that basically means that your PNRP stuff is probably broke. But some interesting things here. You know, the network type is unmanaged. You may see that show up as managed. Typically, you'll have an error associated as well, and you need to switch the mode of your Teredo client to what's called enterprise client. Usually, that means you're sitting behind a firewall or in some kind of domain environment, something like that. You can also see what kind of NAT you're sitting behind. So here, I'm sitting behind a restricted NAT. Earlier in the presentation, I talked about symmetric NATs causing problems. To be really clear, that issue is when both clients are sitting behind symmetric NATs. If only one client is behind a symmetric NAT, in most cases, that will not cause a problem. It used to cause a problem in the earlier version of PNRP, version 1, but I believe that's one of the things they fixed going to version 2. You'll also maybe see cone here or symmetric as the NAT that you're working with. So just some information that kind of get you on those initial steps of troubleshooting if you have it. So that's the end of the demo. In the next screencast, again, we'll build a console application, a couple of them actually, to communicate in the same type of fashion using the PNRP API. So hopefully you've enjoyed this.